Joe Biden riding Mo. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I'm Chris Steirewalt.
And this is Perino and Steirewalt. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what. There's corn, and then there's corn. That is a bushel of corn right there.
Yeah, I just kind of read that cold.
Cold, to say the least.
But I didn't have anything better. I guess the what Jason Bonewald is trying to get us to talk about is that Joe Biden.
Before we talk about anything. Mm. We have to talk about this weird hippie studio.
Thank
that
you.
You do your podcast in. I podcast in a grown-up studio in Washington, D.C. There's a desk.
Mm-hmm.
There's
I've
a computer.
It.
You mm-hmm. feel like it's, you know, like you're at work. There's a bar. There's no
is
booze
that what
in
that
it.
Is?
There's no booze in it, but there's like a stand-up bar here. There's
Chris,
chairs.
The danger you have in describing what this looks like is that they're going to ask for it to be on camera.
Oh.
And we had this discussion.
Which will never happen.
And I have zero makeup on and my
and
hair is in a bun.
It will never happen. It will never happen.
And I'm slouching.
I don't want it and it will never happen.
But there is this is the one time we're going to describe something of what it looks like to you. There is a bar.
There's a bar. It looks like, I want to say it looks like you're in a dormitory.
Yeah, because none of the furniture matches.
The furniture
the bar
does not
is
match.
Black lacquer.
Yep.
And there's one end table that's like blonde wood. There's mm-hmm. a glass and steel other table.
That should
then there's
have,
something here with like fake wood.
That looks like it's from a hospital.
And it is on wheels. And then my least favorite color on earth, this like maroon, dusty red, like
I would call this like pancreas red.
And you are on a black leather couch.
Yes. That looks like it came from the VIP room at a gentleman's club.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in here.
There's a lot. And here's Hamda bringing the iced tea.
In
Thank
real
you,
time.
Hamda.
In real time.
You know, Hamda is Muslim. She is fasting for the month of Ramadan. So the fact that she went and got this iced tea and she can't even have a sip of anything all day long is a big deal.
You remind me of something else I realized today. Paper straws.
Mm-hmm.
Are like taking your shoes off at the airport. It doesn't do that much good, right? It's not helping that much, but it's so uncomfortable and unpleasant.
It's so gross.
It's so uncomfortable
and then
you
have
so
to
unpleasant.
Walk like with your feet kind of like crunched in.
And then when you see the sweat marks from the feet
Mm-mm.
of the person in front
Mm-mm.
of you inside the naked body picture scanner. But it's the same effect. You're not saving the environment by not using plastic straws, but it's the terribleness of it makes you feel virtuous.
You are, I mean, paper straws do dissolve.
Yeah, oh, you know.
While you're
in
drinking.
Your mouth. Yeah, there's no problem.
Hamda's giving us a sign. Oh, pasta straws. This is apparently the new string.
Pass.
Why? I'm for
Pass.
That.
I don't want. Pot.
Why not?
I don't want to. Well, first of all, there's probably carbs. But second of
you're
all,
you're not eating it.
I
you're
know,
just sipping through it.
I mean, I understand you could have long rigatoni and you could drink through.
Oh, that
a
would
piece
be so fun, right? If it's like a curly straw.
Well, that would be fusilli.
Oh, fusilli.
Or no,
fusilli straw. Yeah.
Ratatouille.
I have no idea.
I got nothing. They're barking up the wrong tree if they want pasta knowledge.
Yeah. Did you see the thing yesterday about TSA? Figuring out a way to
$3 million in lost change
in 4 years.
Yeah.
And I thought, who carries change anymore? A lot of people,
A lot of people carry change, apparently.
But they don't care enough about it to pick it back up.
I don't keep pennies anymore.
You know, I remember I got in trouble when I was a little kid. Oh gosh, I must have been like 6 or 7 and I had to clean my room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I cleaned my room and my parents found I put pennies in the trash can.
You were in trouble.
A big trouble. I've never thrown a penny away since.
I broke up.
And of course, you know, like when I say I'm in big trouble,
right.
They probably said, please don't ever do
please
that again.
Do that
and
again.
I like self-punish for the rest of my life. I'm 47 and
still
upset
thinking
about
it. I broke up with pennies 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I just realized, because if you, silver change adds up. I still use mm-hmm. actual money occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And like silver change adds up. And when you get a 12-ounce cupful, that's some money.
You know, let me back up. I actually am going to scold myself because that's what I do.
You're very on brand.
When I say no one uses cash, of course, I'm talking about like the 5 people in my life that I talk to all the time.
Right.
I use a card for everything. If I ask Hamda to go get something, there's a card that she uses for
right.
that. If I go upstairs here, I use my ID.
Right.
because that's attached to my card, right, and it comes out on my debit card. So
Do you ever pay with your phone?
My niece and Jessica, by the way, if you're listening, if you could come and help me complete the setup process, I'd really appreciate it, because she tried when we were in Africa to set it all up, and then she goes, "Oh, when we get back to the States, I'll finish it." And I said, "Oh no, I can do it," and then I can't figure it out from there. Yeah. No, so and actually, Jessica, we would love to see you if you could come this summer. That'd be great. But what I was going to say is, I actually have concern about these people not accepting cash, so stores that don't accept cash, etc. And a couple of cities, and I think Philadelphia is one of them, have said, their city council have said, that is not allowed, because you have people who are still utilizing change. And I'm like, well, then I guess you can't just all of a sudden say at your local convenience store, like, no more cash.
Well, I mean, I take a different view, which is, if it's my convenience store, if I want you to pay.
No, I know, because you know, and I'm.
If I want you to pay in chickens, if I say we're only accepting chickens for barter at my convenience store, it would be a loud and dirty convenience store. But I think that it's the merchant's choice. And I also look, I am John Newman Steyerwald's son. I too have spooky, weird ideas about the federal government and cashless societies and what happens out there. Mm-hmm. I dig it and I get it. But on the other hand, the amount of manpower and man hours that go into handling, sorting, making change, all of that stuff, and especially as we move to automation.
I'm having anxiety about automation. I have a feeling like. So I always have appreciated Tucker Carlson's approach on this. I don't always agree with it, and this is about AI, automation, things like that. Last October, I went out to California and I did an event for Fox Business, and Condoleezza Rice was the speaker, and so I interviewed her on stage.
I remember,
But beforehand, she gave a speech. Now, this was to, I can't remember which of the big auto companies, was one of them. And I was pretty surprised that she said to all of them, she said, "I really want you to think carefully before you go to all robotics."
Yeah.
We have to take care of people. People need jobs. And it had been on my mind anyway. And then yesterday we did that story all day long on the Five about, not the Five, excuse me, on Fox News, and including the Daily Briefing. We had Robert Gray, a really great reporter here. He was out there with that robot barista.
I saw.
And you don't have to talk to anybody. Your order is always correct. He shakes it just right.
Yep.
Turns it back to you. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to touch anything. There's no money exchange. I mean, the money is exchanged, but it's done all through the app.
Right.
And it's just like super cool. And the thing is, I thought, I understand the frustration. Like, Peter went to the pharmacy the other night to get a prescription, and he sent me a note. He goes, "I'm going to be late. It's a shambles." He was there 45 minutes. People were there, had been there in front of him.
Oh.
And he didn't really need, it wasn't like life-saving what he needed, but some people were just really upset.
Oh, can you imagine? And you were there for your kid's prescription?
Yeah, so you're frustrated and you only have a little limited time with your family anyway outside of work. So, but I was then thinking of the U.S. Postal Service. Did you see what they did? Long haul.
Yeah.
Delivery. Well, driving of moving of mail from Phoenix to Dallas, all driverless.
Yep. Well, there will be humans.
There's two people in there.
Yeah, there will.
But there won't always be.
There won't always be. Look, I think there's two tracks of a discussion here. There's one about the rise of the machines. There's the gut.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like a Luddite, because I do think you can't stop progress.
There's a Gutfeldian thing here about the rise of the machines and AI will eat us all. And that's, in terms of an ethics standpoint and in terms of what we're doing going forward, that's very important. Then there's another thing, which is, what is the point of life? Why are we here? For a lot of us, myself included, work is not the point, but is the central pillar, right? Mm-hmm. It's the pole in the center of the tent. I think one of the big problems that we have with the protracted adolescence that Americans find themselves in is, with so much free time and so much disposable income, and when we talk about the sort of disaffected, dislocated young American male, we're talking about people. It's like if you were having to work hard that by the sweat of your brow to earn your bread every day, mm-hmm. you don't have time to be a loser. Like mm-hmm. you have to work to support your family. You have to work hard. If you're a coal miner, if you're a truck driver, if you're working in a steel mill, if you're doing those jobs, if you're a farmer, you don't have time to be a loser because you're either working or you're tired. Mm-hmm. What happens when, as we talked about it during the Obamacare discussion, what happens when people are freed from work? Because there is a scenario, there's a future scenario in which there is abundance, there's peace, things are okay, and people are working even less, right? That there's even...
Yes, remember Nancy Pelosi at the time said you'll be able to take poetry classes and play guitar and...
That's right, you do whatever you want. Well, as it turns out, having purposeful work to do, you know the Jenny Steyerwalt McIntyre motto, everybody needs the same three things at every stage in their life, someone to love... something to do and something to look forward to. Hmm. And work is the central point there, right? You got to have somebody to love, yes, but you have to have something to do. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm like a lot of people. I have good impulses to do nice things and all this stuff, but I'm lazy, right? Work makes me work. Work makes me get out. Work makes mm-hmm. me do that stuff. And I am concerned about what's happening to us as we are, quote unquote, freed from work.
I agree. That was a kind of a wake-up call yesterday. I thought, wow, we're not prepared, right? Because 5 years, 10 years goes by super fast.
I was, I've been watching the Ken Burns documentary on Prohibition, which came out 5 years ago. I didn't even know it existed.
I didn't either.
It is magnificent. Huh. It is maybe since the Civil War, the one that I have liked of his the best.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna watch it.
It is just, and it is this. Substantially forgotten. I know about it because it has a lot of intersections with politics, of course, and our friends William Jennings Bryan and Woodrow Wilson, and the intersection between the populist progressives and the prohibitionists and all of this stuff, the Germans, the rise of German-American politics and all this stuff. It's all fascinating, and I really enjoy it. But as I was watching it and thinking about the power of radio in the 20s and how new it was. And the disruptions that we're going through now are, what's the old joke? History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Mm-hmm. We're in a rhyming couplet now with what happened when we had the last information revolution.
Instead of prohibition, we're legalizing marijuana.
Well, the point being, when people have a new technology, when people have new ways to do things, they're effective at using this tool to divide each other, wedge issues. Temperance was a wedge issue. Prohibition was a wedge issue. It excited the ill humors on both sides, right? If you were a prohibitionist, you believed that this was essential to save the nation, that the alcoholism was rampant, people were drunk in the streets, women were battered. It was all tied into women's suffrage and women's rights. This was a seen as a women's issue to protect women at home and protect from demon rum and who spend their paycheck and then come home on Saturday and beat up their wife. Mm. So this was there, and it was a Christian issue.
Do you know that like in Britain, they still have payments to women and mothers?
Do they?
For that very reason. Like if you have a baby today, you get a certain bit from the government just in case he's going to be rat out on you.
Probably more useful than we wish. I think the technological upheaval, radio's new in the 20s, social media, it's all new. We look back and see these revolutionary changes in history. How crazy it was that in 1920, we banned the sale of all intoxicating liquors in the United States and gave women the right to vote. Those are enormous changes from all of previous history. Mm-hmm. No one had ever tried prohibition before, and no one had ever given women the right to vote before. This was a whole new deal. And we're going through it again. And huge changes are going to descend from this. But I think it would just be important, and I know I'm always saying something like this, but I'm always reminded of it. Everybody ought to just calm down a little bit.
No, I agree.
Just calm down a little bit. I don't think we're going to, I don't know what will descend from this moment, but we're still pretty early into this second industrial revolution, or third industrial revolution that we're living through.
And so let's go back to let's go to politics. We haven't gotten there yet.
We haven't gotten there yet.
We started with this, the Joe Biden terrible pun.
Tell it again.
Joe Biden riding Mo.
Now I like it. I think I'm coming around on it.
So meaning momentum.
He's got the Joe Mo.
The Quinnipiac poll came out.
Yep.
And it had him still 35 to Bernie's 16.
Yep.
Does it matter that he was down 3 and Bernie was up 5? I mean, if you're still up by 20.
Well, a 3-point fluctuation is whatever. That could be a Buttigieg boomlet. That could be 3 points is could be just noise. The interesting thing in the poll to me, there is a death match, an absolute death match between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Mm. And Warren is starting to get her feet. Right?
Yeah.
She's in the fight.
Yeah. Colin Reed wrote about that this week. Does she have a second wind?
It's the same wind. It's a stale wind, but it is the same wind.
A stale wind is going to blow.
And Bernie knows it. She's got a 50-state strategy. Mm-hmm. She's laying in wait for him, and she's looking for places with poor, old, white people. She's going to find, if you got poor old white people looking at you, West Virginia, Kentucky, Arkansas, looking at places that are overwhelmingly Republican, but where the Democratic base is lower income, white, and older. Those are the places that.
And this is her strategy to try to stay competitive through the primary?
Yes, to grind out Bernard Sanders. This is a total, like her, the magnum opus she wrote about not going on Fox News, mm-hmm. which was just like snort.
Whatever.
She writes this long thing. That was, about sucking up to her base and raising some money, but that was really targeted at Bernie Sanders. You did a Fox News town hall. I am purer than thou.
But did Bernie Sanders not benefit from doing the town hall?
Of course he did.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that she doesn't benefit by using it against him.
It doesn't mean
that there's not some
advantage. At some point, aren't they going to start taking swipes at Biden?
Well, they got to deal with each other first. They're sort of in the Jeb Rubio situation, which is there can only be one.
Christie.
Yeah, there can only be one.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be decided in New Hampshire, I assume.
Sort of like Jeb Marco and Christie.
Right. It'll be decided in New Hampshire substantially. And the question is, which of them will get to chase down? If the race were to stay constituted as it is now, the thing would be who will get to chase Biden across the country, right? And who will get to shred Joe Biden? Who will get the chance to say the very worst things about Joe Biden at the end? And what would probably, and again, this is Biden stays on top, in what would probably be a quixotic effort to win the nomination, but one that would substantially damage Biden's chances in the general election.
Mm.
Who gets to ruin it for the Democrats in 2020 is basically the question that they're asking.
It's the race.
It's what Matchlap's greatest line in 2016. He said, "It's a race to the bottom, and I think we can win it."
No, that was Continetti.
No, Schlapp said it first.
No.
I'm crediting Schlapp.
I'm positive Continetti wrote it.
Continetti definitely wrote it, but I heard it from Matchlap before Continetti wrote it.
Okay. Well, hey, Matchlap.
Matchlap.
Way to go.
Way to go.
Way to go. Did anything else in that poll surprise you?
Yeah. The most significant number in that poll is 54%. That is the percentage of American voters who say that they absolutely will not vote for Donald Trump.
Isn't that about the number, though, that didn't vote for him in 2016?
Well, yeah, that's right. But here's the problem. Barack Obama at this point, George Bush at this point, Bill Clinton at this point, you're looking in the 30s, right? Mm-hmm. Trump is 20. He is 20 points heavier.
He is 20 points heavier
mm-hmm. than they were. And we've never seen a president that had a majority of the nation say that they will definitely not mm-hmm. vote for him. Now, you don't need a national majority to become the president. You just need 270 electoral votes by hook or by crook. And that's true. And it's also true that 54% will soften up if the Democrats have a bad nominee or a bad nominating process, that there will be some elasticity in that number. But what the Trump campaign has to pay attention to, this is even, there's a CBS poll out today that says that a majority of Americans in the CBS poll, 51%, 52%, credit Trump, or they approve of his handling of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And now 40% credit him for it.
Right.
But his approval rating is 41%.
Mm-hmm.
And there is getting to be, I'm hearing the frustration creep in among Republicans. But the economy's so good. Why isn't he getting the credit for the economy? And I would just say he is. And they still don't like him, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what these polls tell me. People, yep.
But you don't have to like him.
Exactly.
For him to win.
People have.
Right, to vote for him.
You don't have to like him, but you do have to like him. Like is a funny word. When we talk about favorability, we're really talking about my favorite question, the magic question, which is, do I think that this person cares about me and people like me? Do I think that this person has my best interest at heart? When we talk about people liked Bush better than Kerry. They would rather have a beer with him. People liked Obama more than Romney. That's not getting it. And that also, by the way, treats voters like children. The reality is people make the Steyerwaldian rule number 738. People vote for Americans will vote for very liberal people. They will vote for very conservative people, but they always vote for people.
Mm-hmm.
And like includes a lot. And what we're really talking about is trust and confidence that this person will have my best interest at heart.
Yeah.
And
so I'm going to say that I'm a no on Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. She's put that energy out there.
Yeah.
Yes. She's put that energy out there. And for Trump, the danger is that if voters meet a Democrat who they say, oh, I think this person cares about me. The policy stuff is not nearly as important as we would like to imagine that it is.
Mm.
The platform is not nearly as important. It's I generally have confidence this person is not out to get me. It's not out to hurt me. It's not crooked. And that's how Obama beat Romney. Obama beat Romney by turning Mitt Romney into a vampire, a bad man, an evil person.
Yeah.
This guy's out to take your job. He's out to hurt you. And that's what it'll come down to. So that 54% number, the Trump campaign has a lot of strategies in a lot of places, and they're talking about New Mexico and Nevada and all kind of stuff, and that's all cool. But a 20 point being heavier on that bad metric by 20 points than any of his predecessors is something that we should pay attention to.
Pay attention to it. Did you happen to pay any attention to the Australian election?
I did.
That took place over the weekend. I wonder if we could talk about that, because obviously it's not the same. I know it's Australia. By the way, I'm watching Offspring. I'm in the fifth of seven seasons.
What is the Offspring?
It's
the American semi-punk band.
Commie drama, hour-long thing of the family, the Proudman family.
Okay.
And if anybody listening also watches Offspring and loves it as much as I do, I would love to talk to somebody about it. Peter and I love it. I'm already upset because I know there's only... Well, I've got the fifth season to finish, and then it'll be over. And apparently, Australians are still very upset that Offspring finished. However, I don't know if that had anything to do with the election results.
probably not. Oh, by the way, did you ever watch the Ricky Gervais series Afterlife? Did we ever talk about that?
No, I watched Idiot Abroad.
Idiot Abroad was funny. Afterlife is.
Oh, we talked about it, but isn't he in one called Derek now?
Oh, no, but if he is, I want to see it.
Peter watched it, and he says that he watched the first one, and he said he doesn't know if he would watch a second, he said, because they are so good as actors that it felt too intrusive.
Oh, dear.
Into somebody's life.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. All right.
It's called Derek.
All right.
Anyway, Australia.
Anglosphere television update complete. Check.
They have a new prime minister.
Yes.
Scott Morrison.
Well, and I've heard that this is just like Brexit, and it's just like Trump's election, and mm-hmm. the polls were all wrong,
yeah.
and this means that the
yep.
and it also has to do with the
and Green. That means that Trump is actually the president of the world.
Trump
That's
is the
of...
president of the world, and he gets two extra years, and it's all there, and the polls are wrong, and no one can ever do polling again.
Yes.
And fake news. That's
yes.
what I heard.
Yes.
I think that's what happened. Oh, no, wait.
I would like to know what happened, but that is what people are saying.
The so there was a 3-point polling error. Now, polling in – so basically it was that the blue team was supposed to win. The polls were unusually in concert, and the blue team was supposed to win 51-49, but the red team won 51-49. So it ended up being a polling error of 3 points on average. Now, polling error under 3 points, cool, right? Basically, yeah. we had polling error approaching that. I think the error was 2.7 points in 2012 and 2.4 points in 2016.
16, right.
So. Look, a very close election, and it was supposed to go this way, and it went the other way. And I guess what I would say is the availability. So there are two things we're talking about: an availability cascade, and also we're talking about confirmation bias. So if I believe that the furniture in this room is really ugly,
seconded.
I'm going to be able to everything I see that reinforces that. I'm going to see that before I will see the things that say actually it's an attractive and casual space. There's evidence of both of the that you could make a case. The things that reinforce your own argument you see a lot faster than you see those that reinforce the other guys. It's just our nature. It's sort of unavoidable.
So you know how people talk about shy Trump voters,
right?
I was listening to a podcast that. About the Australian election, in which they said there were shy conservative voters there that you don't want to actually tell pollsters.
There's an error rate there, and I will say it again, and we've talked about it before. But people, you know, it's interesting. People never seem to tire about talking about polling and polls.
No, they don't.
We have a substantial problem, which is the over determinism with which people treat polls. I spend part of my day, every day of my adult life, I have spent around public opinion research. I'm in it. I'm swimming in it. You can't take this stuff that seriously, right? So the poll says blue team's going to win by 2, but the red team won by 2. Oh, okay.
Right.
Interesting. Whatever. Like, polling is expensive, all this stuff. But you remember what losing politicians always used to say. The only poll that counts is the one on election day. The overdeterminism with which polls are treated in two ways. One, our colleagues at other news organizations, our peers at other news organizations, don't know diddly squat about polling and how it works. And so in 2016, I said, yeah, I think Donald Trump has about a 1 in 5 chance of beating Hillary Clinton. And this is then and Nate Silver was in a similar place. Harry Enten, I think, would have probably agreed in about that bandwidth. And it was received by people who were not paying attention and talk about an availability cascade and confirmation bias. Hillary Clinton will definitely win. It's like, no. 1 in 5 is not nothing. Like he can shoot the gap. This is not like he's got a 5% chance of winning. It's that he's got a 1 in 5 chance of winning.
Should people who pay attention to the election or politics just kind of take a glancing look at polls right now? As a sort of like, this is where they are at the moment, but don't get too into it.
In a weird way, they're the most useful now. They're in the Democratic process. They're more useful now because now we're not talking about in 6 months. I'm going to be less interested in national polls. I'm going to be more interested in state polling. I'm going to be more interested in how many people are showing up for events. I'm going to be interested because now we're down to like, how's Iowa going to break? How's New Hampshire? Now we're down to the nitty gritty of individual states and fluctuations of 5 points on the national poll become less important. Now, though, it's telling us important things. Democrats are, if you think about it this way, it's like they've opened up the arena. The concert is still 3 hours away. But the people are starting to file into the building, right? They know the show's going to start in a while. and they're starting to come through the doors. These national polls give us a good sense of, yeah, you know, I'm liking him. I like that. May change, liking that. Who's getting momentum? Who's moving in what direction? Then this is shaping the way the campaigns act, right?
So what did you witness anything when you were up in New Hampshire that was interesting, different, or is it pretty much the same?
I want to say I loved Claremont, New Hampshire, up in the White Mountains. We stayed in Lebanon, and I forgot how beautiful. It's there on the Vermont border. It's just gorgeous, and it's so the Norman Rockwell effect. I ate in a diner. Bill Salmon and I went and had lunch in a diner that was called it was something like Pappy's Tumble Inn. And it was in an old rail car, and it was on the main drag in Claremont. And it was, number one, to all the restaurants out there, consider offering sides of kielbasa, because I will always get a side of kielbasa when I come into your establishment. Like, if I was at Charlie Palmer's in Washington, and they had, I can get a side of kielbasa, it's happening. They had kielbasa sides, but also when I ordered, I had a chef salad. They brought it out, and it was like 2 tablespoons of salad, and there was some like chopped up ham in it. I don't get the feeling that people order a lot of salads in mm-hmm. this location. Mm-hmm. But then, and she said, "What kind of dressing did you want?" I said, "Ranch." And she brought out a 52-ounce. She brought out a 52-ounce bottle of ranch dressing and put it on the table like I was a gunslinger in the Old West and had just walked up to the bar, like, boom, finish the bottle, chug it.
Were you eating when you got called back out to do the daily briefing in the emergency?
I was. I certainly was.
Did you hear what happened?
No, what happened? Oh, I did.
We had James Pindell from the Boston Globe on, and he covers New Hampshire, right, obviously. But nobody had told the control room and my producer that the satellite wasn't working.
Ew.
So we're like barreling along, and I'm excited because I've got a few questions for him. And in the commercial break, they say, "We don't have James." Efforting Chris Steierwalt. I'm like, "Is he still there?" And they're like, "We hope so."
Hey, it was I was sitting with Peter Ducey in the Portland Pies pizza place right there, and I was crushing chicken wings, so it was fine.
I love that segment we do on the daily briefing, the campaign trail mix.
Trail mix,
because
I love it.
It's so funny. There's all this stuff happening with 23 candidates.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, so Steve Bullock, the governor of Montana.
Yeah.
They said he's going to be aggressively available. I did an interview with him. When did I do the interview?
I'm going to be aggressively available.
Well, I think that they knew that like they've got. He's got low name IDs.
That's like a guy who is like.
That's like Scarlett Johansson telling everyone that she's very single.
Right, I'm aggressively available. I'm putting it out there.
And then so he did the interview on the Daily Briefing, and then I know he's going to be in Iowa for 4 days, and he got the AG Matt Miller, I think is his name, Tom Miller, the AG of Iowa.
Okay.
Anyway, that guy endorsed him.
Oh.
But then I haven't really heard anything since.
Yeah. I mean, no. Mm. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. No, it isn't. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. Very few people will get to be president.
There is somebody that you and I both know that say he's their sleeper candidate.
Can you?
I'll tell you after.
Tell me, mm-hmm. You'll tell me what after?
Yes. and it was if Biden collapses.
If Biden collapses. No. I mean, if Biden collapses, at what point? I mean, you got to go through 8 other people to get to Steve Bullock. John Hickenlooper is still a thing, right? Like, there's all this other inventory, and it may help to seem fresher, I guess. But I just
you're like nah. Any plans for Memorial Day?
My plan right now is to ask you the mailbag questions. That
oh, you did mailbag?
I did mailbag. And we
oh,
have
I
just
thought we didn't
time.
Have them. Okay, fine.
No, I did it for you. I said, people of the internet, I need your I'll tell you what podcast mailbag questions for National Treasure / really hungry but nothing sounds good, maybe just a granola bar, Dana Perino.
So true. Okay.
Okay. This guy wonders if Justin Amash will run for Libertarian president with Kennedy.
So interesting, Matt Walsh.
Yeah.
From
Reason
Magazine. Yeah. Follow him on Twitter. If you're interested about Justin Amash, follow him. He makes a point about if there was ever going to be a third party candidate, and if it were to be Justin Amash, that maybe then he would have a chance. But I mean, he's not saying that that's actually going to happen.
It might, and I guess I would say it would be for libertarians. It would be an important thing. Normally you're like, it's Ron. Hey, Ron Paul, how you doing? Federal Reserve, loud noises. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Justin Amash is a serious person mm-hmm. who has a very serious. He's a bit of a gadfly. I'm not gonna.
I didn't realize that. Also, his father was a Syrian immigrant.
Yep.
His mother was a Palestinian refugee.
Yep. And he has
studied so hard.
And he is so conservative. And I mean, like, conservative. All right. Tyler Ness wants to know, with the success of Dana live tweeting the NFL draft, will you be live tweeting the NBA draft?
I'm going to pass on that. I know nothing. Okay. I say I know nothing about football, I know nothing about basketball. I know a little bit about football, at least. I'm also just like completely uninterested in basketball.
So I'm gonna make a suggestion to you. Mm-hmm. Look at it for a second, because the clothes.
Oh, okay.
Are doing.
There's something to tweet about about basketball.
I see Devin Kelly in the control room outside of the Hookah Lounge where we're recording this, and Devin Kelly will remember there was a WVU basketball player named Kevin Pitsnoggle. The
nice
Pits.
Name.
Isn't that a great name?
Great name.
And he looked like the man the mountain made. He was huge. And he was from West Virginia, and he was a lot of heart. When he showed up to the NBA draft, he looked like a purple toadstool. It was the most hilarious thing. I believe he had a top hat. And he is 7 feet tall or whatever, so a top hat on Kevin Pitsnoggle.
When is this draft?
I don't know when the draft is, but the clothes are just like
okay. The
17 button front, like down to your knees. It's just like, oh, it's like going to a wedding and seeing how your cousins got dressed. MT595 says, how do you track whose articles to read every day? You always cite specific writers that you like to read, but do you just search each day for those writers? Use a feed service?
Hmm. We're very fortunate here at Fox. Our brain room puts together clips. Mm-hmm. I call them, Peter laughs, and I still call them clips.
No, they're clips.
Clips back in the day were, you know, you had to Xerox them,
yeah.
And they came to you, and they were clipped together, and so you would bring the clips. And they're broken up into editorials, domestic policy stuff, foreign policy stuff, Middle East stuff, and then some, you know, whatever else might be hot at the time. So I read all of those. I tend to read a lot of columnists. The other thing is I have a really good memory still, thankfully, for people who write. But I also am very conscientious about crediting writers because they're doing so much work and then we get to talk about it.
Right. Talk is cheap.
They're on the ground. They're doing all that work. So I like to.
I do.
To credit them.
And also for me, as I'm consuming. So let's say Ken Thomas, who is now at the Wall Street Journal, used to be at the AP. Ken is a friend of mine, but Ken is also an exceptionally good and clear-eyed.
Yeah.
Very clear-eyed political journalist.
Yeah, so like if Paul Kane.
Right, exactly.
At the Washington
Paul
Post.
Kane.
So when Paul Kane lived in a group house next to my group house in 1995.
Get out of here.
Yeah, in D.C.
I love Paul, and Paul is, you're exactly right. When I see, well, for example, Robert Pair with the New York Times
Absolutely.
Passed away.
He passed. Always read him.
And when you saw Robert Pair on a healthcare story, you're like, well, got to read.
Do you know who else? Michael Phillips
oh,
of
yeah.
the Wall Street Journal is one of the best feature writers
oh, yeah.
Around. And Jason Gay is one of my favorite new he's not a new columnist, relatively new to me. I started reading him in the Wall Street Journal when he wrote a piece about what had happened to U.S. gymnastics.
Oh, wow, really?
And the scandals, the sexual misconduct. And I've read him ever since. And he actually writes, he writes so much about all sorts of different things. He's fantastic. So, and I got to have him on the show one day.
I want to tell you that here's a person who really doesn't get you. His suggestion, I said, she doesn't really know what to eat. And his suggestion for you, I think offered sincerely, Jamie suggests a fried bologna sandwich with mayonnaise, mustard, tomato, and bacon. And it's like, do you eat, Jamie, this is the antithesis. This is the opposite. You would never eat
that. Yeah, I'm going to pass on that.
Would never eat that.
I have found a new favorite meal, though, in Bayhead.
What is that?
There's a place called the Dune Grass Cafe.
Okay. It sounds like someplace you'd eat.
They have blackened chicken tacos.
Oh.
And they're the little tacos.
Yep. They, so they come in the little
accordion thing.
Yeah.
And they're just the right size.
So it's tiny.
And so Angie came to visit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the cats were fine. And you know, Ben was home taking care of the cats. But she had business. But then she got to stay for the weekend. We went to see Beautiful.
Oh, really?
The Carole King.
The Carole King.
It closes September 1st. And I'm telling you, you must go.
Really?
It was delightful, wonderful, 100%.
Did you feel the earth move under your feet?
At the end. At the end, I did. Well, Chris, you've got a friend. You know what I have going on this weekend?
What you got?
I'm taking care of Spike.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Jen's got to do some things. So Spike is the companion dog in training. That
Spike and Jasper, boys weekend.
It's going to be wild.
Wow.
We're actually kind of looking forward to it.
I think that's going to be fun. Can Spike get in the sidecar?
Yes, he has ridden in it already. Yeah.
All right. He checks out.
Yeah. I actually asked for a list. I said, can you send me a list of things that I don't want to ruin him. You know, we only have Spike until, I say we. Obviously, this is Jen's.
No,
Fox News only has Spike until August 9th.
That's sad. Can I say one thing, other thing before you do the trivia?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to just remind everybody, and I try to remind folks of this each and every year, Memorial Day is not Veterans Day.
Mm-mm.
We have Veterans Day. And I was thinking about this last night. I was watching, I've been working my way through They Shall Not Grow Old. We mm-hmm. talked about that last mm-hmm. week and how affecting it is mm-hmm. and how many died. Right?
I know.
How many died? World War One to Britain was like the Civil War to the United States in terms of the massive casualty.
They lost an entire generation.
An entire generation gone. The massive casualty. What was sacrificed? Memorial Day grew out of the American Civil War, and it grew. It was originally called Decoration Day, and it was observed by the Grand Army of the Republic, the Veterans Organization for Civil War veterans, for the good guys, and the Daughters of the Confederacy did something similar. And the Grand Army of the Republic picked it up, and that led to the moment of reconciliation in the 30s at Gettysburg, and all kinds of things grew out of this. We eventually stopped calling it Decoration Day and started calling it Memorial Day when it was instituted as a national federal holiday. But this is a day to commemorate the dead, those who paid the ultimate price at war. I don't care if you have a mattress sale. I don't care if you do, like, people can do whatever they want to do. It's all good. But my point is, people should be aware of what we are observing. We are talking about more than a million men who died at arms for the United States.
Yep.
That's what we're talking about. And we should bear that the solemnity of this as an observation. Veterans Day is a great day to celebrate. This is a day that you should pass some part of it in quiet observation.
We're going to go to a service that Mr. Landers, Tim Landers,
oh, nice.
Is officiating.
I think is it the Iraqi Veterans Group, the IAVA? I think it's the IAVA that pushes 3 minutes of silence. That I think it's I'll tweet it if I find it. But they ask for 3 minutes of silence on at 3 o'clock on Memorial Day.
Oh,
and I think that's a.
I like that.
I think that's something we could do.
I can do that. I would be happy to do that. All right, trivia. You got to go downstairs, and they're going to be like, "Where's Chris?" Okay. Mayor Pete's town hall was Sunday, as we talked about.
Yep.
Bill de Blasio announced his candidacy last week, and Wayne Messam is also running. So it's time to talk about mayors running for president.
Okay.
No, question number one: who was the last former mayor to win the presidency?
Coolidge.
Yes, you got
it. Yeah. Boom.
Wow, that was impressive. Number two: who was the last former mayor to win his party's nomination?
Last former mayor to win his party's nomination. Who would that be? Somebody was a mayor of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. way up in the Klobuchar country.
Oh, Hubert H. Triple H.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep, Hubert Humphrey. He was mayor of Minneapolis.
He sure was. And the namesake for the most hideous indoor sports facility in the universe.
Really?
The Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. Boo.
Yeah, boo. All right, question number three. Who was the only Democratic former mayor to win the presidency?
Democratic former mayor. To win? So we're going to go with, we're going to say that it is, boy, once you get behind the 60s, it's
think a, Sesame Street.
Think Sesame Street. Bill de Blasio looks like Big Bird. I got nothing. What do you got?
Grover Cleveland.
Who actually is my pick for the most underrated American president.
Why?
He was a great president, and he, in a very difficult period of time for his party, deeply divided and all of this stuff. And if you dig a political writing, his veto messages, he set the record for vetoes.
Really?
His veto messages were.
I love political writing.
Yep.
Like John Roberts, when I was the spokesperson for his nomination to the Supreme Court. You had to dig through all of those former memos and letters that he had written, and he was very funny. And actually, I listened to an interesting podcast with Joan Biskupic.
Okay.
She's the New York Times, I think, is it New York Times writer for about Supreme Court? No, that's Linda Greenhouse. Joan writes for someone.
Okay. Stipulated.
About the Supreme Court, but she's just written a book and published it about John Roberts.
Oh, really?
And it was pretty interesting.
Oh, cool.
But she said that he is the best writer on the court.
He is a good writer.
Okay, ready?
Ready.
All right, we're going to get out of this room. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.